Welcome and thank you for standing by. At this time, all lines have been placed in listen-only mode until the question and answer session. At that time, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star one. Today's call is being recorded. If anyone has any objections, you may disconnect at this time. I would now like to turn the call over to James Spilone. Sir, you may begin.
Good morning, everyone. This is James Spilone, Deputy Secretary of the State. I'm here at the Secretary of State's office in Hartford, and I'm joined by Peggy Reeves, the Elections Director, and Senior Attorney Ted Bromley, and some other members of our team to discuss Senate Bill 1051, which is now Public Act 15-224, an act strengthening the state's elections. This bill was a signature project of the Secretary of the State's office this year, and we were pleased to work in conjunction with, of course, the Government Administration Elections Committee leadership and the Connecticut Registrars of Voters Association and the Connecticut Town Clerks Association and others to develop what is really a transformational piece of legislation, but brings to fruition many, many goals that have been on the agenda of both this office and the Registrars of Voters organization for many years. So we were pleased to work in partnership with many of you to bring this legislation through to final passage and signature by Governor Malloy within the last week or so. Because it has a lot of components and because it imposes new requirements and expectations and changes some processes and procedures, we thought that it was critical to give you a chance to hear from us and then ask questions of our staff going forward. The bill is primarily effective upon passage, so we're in a good position to get it underway, being in a municipal election year. So with no further delay, I'd like to turn the call over to Peggy Reeves to begin a description of the substance of the bill, and we will take questions along the way as we go through the different. We're not going section by section in the bill, but we're going topic by topic. So, Peggy, over to you.
Thank you very much, Jamie. This is Peggy Reeves, and again, I thank you all for taking the time today to join with us as we talk about this bill. And as Jamie mentioned, we're going to conduct this discussion a little bit differently in that because it is somewhat complicated, we want to take your questions along the way. So I will at first start talking about the training component. And I know that, in fact, as I speak, Kevin Ahern and Melissa Russell are going around the state to talk to the counties about this piece in the legislation with regard to the training of all of you. So I think it's really important that we are doing this conference call today. And when I, after I finish speaking, and Ted Bromley is with me as well, and as he also introduces other things, we will be happy to take your questions. I do want to thank the certification committee. They worked very, very hard. I was able to sit in on a couple of the meetings, and I know Ted was as well, and we were there for the formal presentation to Secretary Merrill and the Deputy Secretary. This is something that has been 20 years in the making, and we are very pleased with the result. This is something that you have asked for, to be trained, to be certified. And we are very pleased that, in fact, they've come up with this educational partner of UConn's Business Information Center, a technology center, which we think will make it easy for all of you to access these classes in that we can use the distance learning service that they provide. So let me go quickly. Instead of going bullet by bullet through things, I think you have that in front of you. I just want to point out some important parts of it. Obviously, all registrars are now required to become certified. The curriculum has been developed, as we talked, by the committee. The first module has been completed, and there will be 8 modules altogether. I know that right now the certification committee is working with UConn to develop the other modules. it is our understanding that the towns will be required to pay the cost of the tuition. It'll be about $200 per module, and with eight modules, that's $1,600 per registrar. The deputies are also encouraged to take the courses if they like, but they're not required to do so. Ted, did you want to add anything to the training component?
No, I think that the working with UConn will be a great benefit to this program, where it will not require an in-person assistance. You can go to any one of the branches throughout the state, so hopefully that adds to both the experience and as well to the ease of being able to accomplish this task. So.
Okay, so I think if we want to open it up for questions on that particular part of our legislation.
Thank you. At this time, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star 1, and please record your name when prompted. One moment, please. And our question comes from Nancy Ryan. Your line is open.
Yes, thank you. Hi, everyone. As far as the municipalities being required to pay the cost of tuition, a couple questions that I have. One, I'll ask them all and then you can reply. One, I would assume the municipalities are required to pay the tuition for the registrars, not necessarily the deputies. And would the secretary or the secretary's office be sending notifications or information out to our municipal administrators so that when we go to ask for additional funding, they do see that this is part of a public act and that it's part of something that they're required to do? And then the third piece would be the municipalities are going to be paying for our tuition, but will they be paying for our time, since now suddenly we're required to spend extra time doing not only the training but the ongoing CEUs or additional training? End of question.
Nancy, I'm sorry. We did not get your full name nor your town.
Nancy Ryan from Bethel.
Oh, from Bethel. Okay, yes. Sure. So, yes, we'll be sending out information to the municipalities should they have any questions on this requirement. What was the second part? I'm sorry.
The deputies, yeah.
The deputies.
The deputies are not required, so that wouldn't be a requirement
right.
on the town.
And certainly, since it's a requirement of your job, we won't be covering the cost of you attending. It's the same as if you were taking moderator training on a Saturday or at night. It's up to your town as to whether they cover your you. But certainly, it depends on, I guess, if you're an hourly employee or a salaried employee. But that's not something that will come from the Secretary of the State's office.
So there's no state funding from this. It's all coming from the municipalities.
Yeah, right. That's correct.
Thank you.
Right, thank you. Next question?
I think our next question comes from David Smith.
Yeah, good morning, Peggy, James, and company. David Smith from Easton. I'm calling let's go through a number of them, actually. Hope all is well with you. Appreciate this opportunity to chat with you. Deputy registrars, as indicated, not mandated to go to this. May they go to it without paying?
No, I think anybody attending the classes, I think the legislation will obviously take another look at the language, but I think that anybody taking a class is expected to pay. It's sort of a pay-as-you-go program. Especially at the beginning, the development of the program is paid for partially by tuition, but also the folks that are teaching and UConn and everybody else gets reimbursed.
Well, in as much as the deputies are critically important on election day and so forth, as well as the rest of the year, of course, it strikes me they should be able to go. I mean, they're only taking up a seat, for goodness sake. They're not getting certified. But what difference does it make whether they pay some money or just sit there and absorb the knowledge?
Right. Yeah. Well, we'll take a note of that, and we'll talk that over here.
At what point in the legislative session did this become a mandatory as opposed to a voluntary bill? And who instituted that?
I think certification, mandatory certification of registrars was a principle set down by the secretary as early as her press conference at the beginning of the session, and was embraced by the legislative leaders involved with this subject from the get-go.
Okay. It was not part of the committee's charge, however, at that point. That changed when it came into the legislative process.
Right. The legislation setting up the certification committee has been in place for a long period of time. There have been some fits and starts in going forward with the certification committee, but as written, certainly certification was not mandatory. That is part of the initiative this year, which converted what had been a proposed voluntary program many years ago into a requirement this year.
The towns are responsible for payment of the $1,600. What about the moderator training component of this?
What about, sir, could you repeat the last part?
Yeah. What about the moderator training component of this, which is also a requirement of the certification?
Moderator training
part. Is the town responsible for paying for that as well, in as much as it's a mandate?
Yeah, I mean, the towns would be responsible for that much like they are today.
Okay. What about, as was aforementioned, time and mileage? Now, in as much as this is a mandate from the state as well, should that not be a part of the town's responsibility as well?
That depends upon the municipality itself, just like it is today.
Well, should it not come down? Should it not come down as the mandate that the $1,600 is? This is a mandate for the program as well. Obviously, you have to be there.
One could certainly hold that opinion, but the legislation speaks for itself.
I knew I should have brought my lawyer with me. But
I'm sorry, David, did you have another question?
Did we lose the call?
No. One moment, please.
Peggy.
David, your line is open.
Hello?
We are here.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you, sir.
Okay. Again, that apparently is not part of the state's mandate to the town or municipality to pay that as well. I mean, if you're a full-time worker, that's one thing. If you are not a full-time worker, if you will, although it seems like we are, that's another.
That point is noted.
Yes.
Thank you.
Suppose a registrar does not complete the course in 2 years or doesn't pass. What happens to the town then?
I don't think anything happens to the town. I think it's a question of what happens to the registrar.
Well, except you can't run the election, of course, without a certified registrar, correct?
Well, either that or the counterpart would have to assume the responsibilities of the deputy would. There are built-in checks and balances within the statute for that. Sure.
And we find that a lot of people are going to be very much inconvenienced in southwestern Connecticut in having to get to Stamford, for example, which is the closest area for many to go. Why is this not being offered online?
Could you hold on just a second, David? I just want to make sure that our answer is accurate. Hold on one moment, please.
Sure.
Oh, my God.
David and everyone, we just wanted to confirm, make sure that we gave an accurate answer here.
Mm-hmm.
The program is designed for optimal learning in interaction with the instructor. Now, there are distance learning opportunities on site at UConn branch campuses.
Right.
But as currently designed, it was, I think, both the committee's consensus that optimum learning experiences would take place through a combination of distance learning at a site and in person. But, you know, certainly things evolve over time, and we take note of people's questions and concerns.
Okay. All right. Thank you, David. We're going to move on to the next question just because we only have an hour. So if you have any other issues, you can certainly email me or Ted.
Thank you. Next question comes from Deborah Witten. Your line is open.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Deborah Witten from the City of Torrington. I'm the Deputy Registrar here.
Hi.
My questions are, I'm concerned as, like with our registrars, we only have a two-year term. They are elected officials. So the municipality to pay the $1,600 for that, what happens if they're not reelected and we've just dished out the $1,600 and our municipalities don't want to do this again?
Please stand by for just a moment.
Okay. All right. So, yes, your question is no different than what exists now in the fact that the town certainly outlays a lot of money, for example, to train moderators or to train poll workers or whatever that the town currently pays, and there's no guarantee that you're going to continue in that role. So we think it's very important, certainly for existing registrars, to be fully trained if they choose to either run or not run, or they run and they lose. I mean, that's all part of, you know, part of being an elected official. There is no guarantee that you're going to be reelected, no guarantee that you're going to be endorsed by your party, but in the time that you are in office, you need to be fully trained and certified.
Okay, I understand that. Now, as being a deputy registrar, if something happens to my registrar and I have to step into his place, do I have to then become certified, or is there a leeway or an exemption for how long you stand in that person's place?
Yes, you would start immediately if you can, the process of becoming certified once you become the moderator. I'm the registrar. So
if it's, even if it's just a temporary position, say they illness, accident, whatever, they're going to be out 1 month, 6 weeks, would I still have to go forward to becoming certified?
No. If they're coming back, that's a whole different thing.
Okay. So, and even if it's at election time, then I just have to refer to my other registrar to have done the training and passed the test to do this.
Yes. And hopefully, as the deputy, you're already very well versed in Title IX. So when you step in, you should be able to do it, even if it's temporary.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Deborah.
Okay. It's all right. Am I still moderator, am I still, I'm still on at the moment? I had a follow-up to that answer.
Yes.
Yes. Folks, the other thing I would point to is in the second section of the bill, there's a provision for an abridged program for deputies to ascend to full registrar status in order to bring them up to speed. That's it. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Our next question comes from Elaine Giordano. Your line is open.
Good morning, everyone. Most of my questions have been answered. I have just two. How soon will you be notifying the towns and cities about the money that they're going to be responsible to pay out for all of this training?
I'm sorry, I didn't get your name and town.
Elaine Giordano, New Fairfield.
Giordano, New Fairfield.
Hello?
So
So, as many of you know, the certification committee themselves are doing presentations within the next couple of weeks. So, I think before we do anything, we're going to allow them to complete their meetings and updates. So, it would be sometime during before the end of the summer, I would assume, where we would be sending out our entire legislative update and information about it, and that's when we would be sending out things to your mayors and first selectmen as well.
Okay, and my second question, thank you for the answer to that one, is on the state level, will there be anybody taking the same courses on the 8 levels that we will be taking?
No.
No.
Okay. All right, thank you. Have a good day. Bye.
Thank you.
Moderator, how many more calls are left in the queue for this section?
We have 4.
Okay. All right, we're going to try to move a little more quickly so that we can get through the rest of this legislation. It's about 3 pages, so.
Okay, so we'll take those 4, and then we'll move on.
Okay, the next question comes from Bill Giesing. Your line is open.
Tell who you are.
This is actually Suzanne Woodward from Woodstock, Connecticut. Just a follow-up, the document we got this week, the legislative update, used the sentence that said, we'll be able to go to one of the UConn branch campuses to attend in person, or use the distance learning service. I, of course, interpreted that to mean maybe we could do this from the comfort of our home. So I just want you to clarify that. And my other question, real brief, is when do you think the process will begin? Will the first classes be in January? Maybe they'll be as early as September or October. Thank you.
Okay. Suzanne, I just wanted to clarify that as UConn uses the phrase distance learning service, it is a special component of their live simulcast in all of their branches. So it is not anything that is done online in the privacy of your home.
Okay.
And for your second question, I assume that they can start.
Right. I mean, I think that one, again, we're going to have to defer to the committee themselves, who I know, at least in New London, you're getting a presentation today.
Mm-hmm.
So they're working with UConn in terms of the availability of the actual classes.
I think also I wanted to add in quickly in response to the last one, the question I didn't get in on that, about notifying the towns about the money. In addition to communications, which I'm sure we will have, as Ted mentioned, the municipalities are, of course, well represented in the Capitol through their organizations. They tracked this legislation. They had some input on it, their organization, so I think some information is filtering out, and we're also going to be in touch with regional councils of government on another component, and we will continue to push that information out, but your concern is definitely well taken.
Okay, thank you. Next question, please.
I think our next question comes from George Cody. Your line is open.
Hi, George.
Good morning. Your first gift of the day. I'm going to pass and hope that my following letter will be given due diligence. But I would like to make one comment. This is coming out to about $3,800 per town, and I would hope that the Secretary of State, in their letter to the first selectman or to the finance boards or whatever, would take into consideration that there are mandated costs. And if attendance at these classes are mandated, then the town must pay. And then there is recommended. And I think that you had a tendency to just slough off the recommended because it's not part of state law. But I do think that the Secretary of State in this situation should come up with a recommendation as to paying attendees and for time and travel. And that's it.
Okay. Thanks, George. Thank you for your comments, and we've taken note of them.
Yeah, we'll look forward to your letter, George.
Next call, please.
Again, next question is from Deborah Fletcher.
This is Deborah Fletcher from Voluntown speaking. The question I have is this a one-time certification as long as the registrar is in office, and if the deputy also goes for the certification and takes over the office of the registrar, does she think she's certified? Does she just step into the position? Thank you.
So your first question is, yes, it is a one-time certification, but of course there is ongoing training throughout every year. In addition, that's the 8 hours of annual training, which is required. So, but yes, you don't, once you've been certified, you hold that for life, you know, unless we may add other courses down the road, but that's what our feeling is.
Okay, and once the, if the deputy takes the course, they just, they're certified and they just step into the registrar's role.
Yes, that's our understanding.
Thank you very much.
Welcome.
Thank you. Next question comes from David Smith.
Yeah, sorry to get back to you again. I think George's point about the time and mileage and so forth for the 26-hour course, which in many cases is obviously going to be closer to 50 or 55 hours when you factor in time and travel, that kind of a message to the municipalities, I think, is very important from a registrar's standpoint, and I hope that you will pass that along. We know that unfunded mandates are not very comfortable for anybody, and certainly not for individuals such as registrars who are working diligently, albeit maybe with other things in life. Secondly, regarding the ability to step in if not passed the certification and so forth, how does that work? Does the deputy, in spite of the fact that they're not certified, or anybody else if they're not certified, are they able to step in to an election situation?
Yes, absolutely, of course. Under current law, the deputy does step in. And again, once the deputy has formally become the registrar and been sworn in, then they start their certification process.
Now, candidly, I suspect that we are not alone in having difficulty in finding people who want to, A, work the polls, but secondly, be moderators, and thirdly, be registrars. The registrars typically are probably the least paid group involved in the election process, and as a result, don't get much deference from the municipality and the funding agency in the municipality. So it is becoming more and more difficult, and I think you're going to find that it will be greatly enhance the degree of difficulty to fill these positions going forward.
Well, David, I just want to say that certainly the secretary's I think whole agenda here was, in fact, to make the job a more professional job and a job that is actually sought after by people who are, you know, after graduating from college or whatever, that it is an election official's job is actually considered something that people would strive to do. So we're hoping to sort of raise the profile of the position of registrar. And so that, in fact, they are more highly paid down the road. So,
Peggy,
but I think that's
a wonderful hope, Peggy. But I think the reality is not going to be seen that way. And you know, you've got to. A lot of people have no idea at all what a registrar's job is and how involved it is. In spite of the fact that we are in many, many towns, most towns, part-time people supposedly, in fact, the time involved is very much more than a typical part-time job that you're committed to. So I think, you know, raising the bar and so forth is wonderful, but if other people, i.e. the funding bodies, are not adequately informed about that, you can raise the bar, but you can't raise the salary.
All right. Well, thanks, David. I think we need to move on to the next topic in order to get through the call within an hour. Appreciate your comments. And I would ask folks, while I think the comments are all well taken, we need to give everybody the opportunity to ask questions about the substance of the legislation. And we look forward to engaging you about broader policy topics at an appropriate time, but we need to move the call along. Thanks very much. So we're going to move on to the next topic, and that will be presented by Ted.
So the next topic is hopefully a relatively simple one, which is that historically there's been a lack of clarity regarding some of our written instructions and how enforceable they are. So part of the legislation clarifies the Office of the Secretary of State and its authority, and also what our written instructions mean. It does put a requirement on us to label any written instruction and also cite the authority to which it was based, but it also makes it more effective and more enforceable. So going forward, that'll be one of our charges.
I think we're going to go into the next one as well, because the removal and suspension, I think you may have more questions.
Yeah. So the next couple of topics really are expedited investigations and temporary and permanent removal of registrars. So one of the aspects of the bill is to shorten the time frame with which elections enforcement has to make both a determination and to complete an investigation, which I think is actually a positive step. It also does two important things. The first is that it creates a process by which a registrar could be temporarily removed based upon what type of investigation is ongoing of that registrar. So what we're talking about there is that if, for whatever reason, let's say a registrar is being investigated for some type of fraudulent activity, the legislation allows that registrar to be temporarily relieved of their duty while that investigation is ongoing, which I think meshes nicely with the shortened term of the investigation. The second is, and the more extreme, is the permanent removal process, where for extraordinary circumstances, a registrar can actually be removed, but that is not something that can be unilaterally done by elections enforcement or even by our office. There are several layers to that, including a review by our office, a review by elections enforcement, and a review by the attorney general before any removal can take place. So it's not something that can be done with sleight of hand or quickly. It certainly is going to have a substantial procedure involved by which to do that. So I'm going to stop there with those couple of topics, because I'm quite sure that there are probably questions out there. So we'll open it up for questions on those topics. Please.
Thank you. At this time, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star 1, and please record your name when prompted. If you'd like to withdraw the request, you may press star 2. Once again, to ask a question, please press star 1, and please record your name when prompted. One moment, please.
Kim, do we have nothing on that?
One moment. We do have questions coming in.
Okay.
First question comes from Patricia Mulhall. Your line is open.
Hi, this is Patricia Mulhall from Waterbury. I have a question. My question being, since we are elected, it appears to me as though, even though we are elected officials, we are, with this new legislation, it's a conditional that the voters, to the voters, be made aware of the fact that they are voting for us for a term, but yet we have to become certified. And if for some reason any of the registrars do not pass certification, that our deputies will now take over as registrars. Am I correct in that assumption?
Well, you know, you raise an interesting issue at the intersection of politics and this new policy, the nomination process. I think, you know, there are a lot of moving parts here. One of them that if a registrar doesn't complete certification, the secretary can suspend them temporarily until they are certified. I think that the party nominating the registrar would be aware of their situation. Complete refusal to become certified could, I suppose, ultimately result in removal. So all these intersecting parts should result in persons getting certified or otherwise dealt with during the process.
There was a discussion this morning, a brief discussion with the mayor this morning on it, and we are going to be meeting on this with corp counsel and whatever, I'm not saying the refusal to do it, and I'm not using Waterbury as an example, I'm saying any registrar in the state who for some reason doesn't pass the certification, that they have to be made aware of the fact that they can be removed from office. And there seems to be a little conflict there that since we are elected, is the authority to remove us or any registrar from office seems to be in conflict with the way I feel, and also in my brief discussion this morning with the mayor, and we are going to be meeting on that at some time during the week. We have a few issues in Waterbury going on right now, so it's going to be backburnered until maybe next week, but that's something that I think that needs to be addressed.
Well, thank you for your comments. It's certainly something new, and we'll look forward to hearing what you have to say. I can assure you that the issue has been well researched, and it's certainly not outside the normal course that elected officials can be subject to removal. Thanks.
Thank you.
Okay, our next question comes from Daria Hart. Your line is open.
Hi, Ted. Hi, everybody. My question goes back to Ted's talk about the issuing of this instructions, PA 115-224. In the notice that you sent out, it says that all instructions, all written instructions should be labeled as such and cite the authority on which it's based. But I'm confused. On page 3 of what you sent out, you didn't cite the authority, and it's my understanding that under changes affecting candidates in a municipal election year, while it says now they must sign the form, that doesn't go into effect until 2016. My second question is changes affecting candidates in state election years. You didn't cite the authority, and I don't know when they go into effect. Are you going to update this with the citing and the effective date?
Yep, when we send out our official legislative update that you all get around the time of your conference, and we also review it at your conference, there'll be a different handout. This handout was intended for the conference call only because we weren't sure whether or not you would all be up to reading the 57-page bill. But yes, those two sections actually do not go into effect, the two that Daria is talking about, until 2016, and that is a topic we were going to bring up when we got there.
Right.
Okay. I'm just curious because this affects what we tell all of our party chairs for caucus that is coming up. In our town, both our caucuses on the 28th. We need to get out the correct information to our party chairman.
Yep.
Thank you, Ted.
Thank you. And I show no other questions at this time.
Great. Move on to the next topic then.
Yeah.
Okay. So we're going to talk a little bit about the process of reporting results. So what we have changed is that you no longer are required to give us your turnout percentages on election night. We know that sometimes takes the longest because you're balancing the people who have been checked through with the numbers on the tabulator, and you're counting and recounting. And I know that takes a long time, and sometimes it's not until the next day. So we will require your candidate totals on election night as your preliminary vote totals. And then on the Friday following the Tuesday election, the moderator is supposed to have been working with the town clerk to identify and correct any errors in the return, and then you need to report those results to our office. And then we're also changing that 14-day period when you were allowed to file amended head moderator's returns. Now we are requiring that you file that amended return no later than 3 days.
And Peggy, just to follow up on that, this actually is a very interesting change, and it's actually a change that many of you, maybe not in the actual form that it appears, but have requested in the past, saying that the reason that it takes so long to do the results and the reason that you continually amend results with us is because that the election night reporting is so complex. So I've already spoken with some registrars, and I know Peggy has as well, so we're not going to just simply base our interpretation and instructions on this one conference call. I mean, we hope that
we will have some registrar involvement into the most effective way to actually carry this provision out. It does bifurcate the results. The interesting thing to note just for you now is that it bifurcates the results in a state year, but it doesn't bifurcate the results for this year. The only thing it does this year is allow you to delay your results so that, in fact, you won't really have to report all of your results to us for a municipal year on election night. It gives you more of a window with which to do that. So we have some time to implement this, and we'll make sure we get all the information out to you. But the bifurcated results that Peggy was talking about is for a state year. For a municipal year, it's slightly different, and it simply gives you a greater time period with which to report. But as I said, we're going to be working with hopefully a group of registrars to get together to implement this and make it a more effective process.
Thanks for that clarification, Ted. I want to go quickly into the changes in voter registration deadlines. This is what many of you have been asking for, which is that we had this, you know, crazy system where we had some with 14, some with 7, and then, of course, we have EDR. So the deadline to register to vote in a general election will be 1 week prior to Election Day. And that deadline will apply to all methods of voter registration. So whether you show up at the registrar's office, whether you mail a form in, whether you do it online with our online voter registration, it's that 7-day period. And the other thing that people had asked for is that on Election Day, for the Election Day registration, which is held in your centrally located site, whether you could use the online tool to do it on a laptop. And, in fact, this allows you to register the voters that day who are waiting in line to register for Election Day.
And so just before we open it up for more questions, let's just, Peggy, dispense with a couple of these other
sure.
smaller changes. So as Daria already has effectively pointed out, the changes affecting candidates in a state election year and changes affecting candidates in municipal election years on page 3, those are the only two sections of this bill that are deferred until 2016. So they did not want to change the rules in the middle of the game for you on that. So those two are delayed until 2016. The other two small changes are, again, these are things that were important to some registrars out there. 16 and 17-year-olds can now serve as ballot clerks. And also, our office will be prescribing a small, probably letter-sized poster to be displayed at each check-in area that sets out the identification rules. And I think that will go a long way towards consistency with everybody out there. And I think it will only be helpful because I know a lot of you have been proactive trying to do that yourself. To clarify for voters, so I think that'll be a good step as well. So one more small thing, then we'll take some questions, then we'll leave one section here. Post-election audits, the bill did go through to allow us to start using the computer-assisted audits in place of hand counts. So that is great news. Hopefully that will not only cut costs but also speed up the process. We are in the process of securing funds to acquire more equipment for that through the University of Connecticut. And so that's all good news. So we will get some more information out to you on that project and the equipment and how we're rolling that out. But the important thing to note on that is that it's been approved, so now that we can officially substitute or use the computer-assisted audits in place of the hand counts. So let's take some questions there on those.
Thank you, and at this time, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star 1, and please record your name when prompted. We do have a question from Lila Tuxbury. Your line is open.
Hi, Ted. Hi, Peggy. My question goes back to the moderator's returns. Will there be updates to the prescribed moderators' returns from your office?
Yeah, I mean, This whole change is really is going to mesh together, you know, in the future in terms of, as I said, the bifurcated results do not apply to a municipal year. So in point of fact, in reality, it's pretty much going to be the same as it always has been in the past for this year and any municipal year. But the important thing is that, yes, our forms will change to reflect the bifurcation. We anticipate working with a group of registrars. Many have already volunteered. Some I have forcefully volunteered to work with us on that. And the process, the instructions, the forms, as well as a system that we have been working on that many of the registrars have seen will all sort of come together and mesh together to make that a much better process.
So not this year.
The legislation does not affect 9-314 subsection B, which is the results for a municipal year.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Joan Broadhurst. Your line is open. Joan, your line is open. You may want to check the mute feature on your phone. Okay, we'll move on to the next question. We have David Smith. Your line is open.
Hi, once again, thank you. The deadline to register to vote, does that take place this year?
Yes, that's a change upon passage, but it only applies to the November election, not for the primary.
Okay, so effectively it will be the Tuesday before. There will be no registration session the Monday before. Is that correct?
Nope. The only thing it changes is the 14-day voter registration deadline.
But typically there's a voter registration the day before the election that you have it going all day. That is not going to be that is going by the boards. Is that correct?
That has not been changed.
So they will be able to come into the office to register the day before the election. Is that, am I reading that right?
Yep. For those, if you're talking about the special class of people like military or those people that just moved into town or whatnot, yep, that hasn't changed.
Okay. And the regional election monitor, is that monitor going to be available this year?
No. Yeah, that's the next topic. So we haven't gotten there yet.
Sorry, I thought you were all done. Okay.
Nope.
Thank you.
Thank you. Once again, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star 1, and please record your name when prompted. One moment, please, for the next question. And the next question comes from Peter Gaston. Your line is open.
Hi, folks. Pete Gaston from New Britain. Question pertaining to the online voter registration the day of the election. If people are in line, and all, how is that to be handled at the EDR point of, registration, if you will? Are the offices required or in some way needing to be involved to get the information to the EDR locations if they are outside of the office? How is that technically going to be handled?
Peter, you know, that's a great question. That's one of the things that I think we need to work out. I don't necessarily have an answer for you right now off the top of my head. I mean, I can tell you what the legislation did not do. The legislation did not change the deadline to register to vote, okay? So all of those things that we were under the understanding about the 8 o'clock deadline and all that kind of stuff has not changed. The only thing that this legislation did was give you the ability to have little kiosks, for lack of a better word, or a laptop or whatever, hooked up to online voter reg to allow people to fill it out that way as opposed to handwriting a voter registration card and handing it to your clerk. So that is, in essence, what the legislation did do. But for all of those details, you know, those are great questions. It would be great if you sort of accumulated some of those and sent them along, because I think those are things that, practically speaking, we're going to have to think about.
I think we'll send an instruction and certainly do another call as the election approaches.
Okay, thanks.
Any more calls on this?
Any more questions?
Okay, and our next question comes from Ellen Campbell. Your line is open.
Hello. Actually, it's Helen Campbell. My question is, if we have EDR, why do we even have a deadline of a week before? In other words, if they can come in on the election day and register, why can't they come in 2 days before or 3 days before to register?
I think that's one of those policy decisions that were made where I think many people feel strongly that there still needs to be a gap where 7 days prior to is a deadline. It gives everybody a chance to catch up on the voter registration cards, produce their official registry lists, all of that kind of work that you're doing so that you are not having your list in flux to a great extent leading up to the election. So I think that sort of grace period was still something that was important to a lot of people.
And I would also note that our state is very voter friendly in moving it to 7 days. In many, many states, it's 25, 30, 45 days. Thank you, though. Good question.
Mm-hmm. And Ellen, I didn't catch your town. I'm sorry.
At Colebrook, and again, it's Helen with an H.
Oh, Helen, I'm sorry.
That's all right.
Kim, so we just want to move on to the last topic, and then we can take a few more questions before our deadline here.
Okay, and there are no questions. Okay. Thank you. That is correct.
Okay.
Go ahead.
All right, excellent. So the last topic is this idea of a regional moderator. So this comes from a separate bill, not Public Act 15224, but a different bill. What it does is it uses a sort of sense of regionalization, the Council of Governments regions, and what it does is it places this idea of an election monitor in each one of the 9 council regions of government. And the role of this person would be to assist local election officials in preparing and advising them of the requirements of the upcoming election, and this individual will be trained by and report to and take direction from the Secretary of State. So that's the idea with that position. So with that, I think we've got, we'll call it, I guess, 5 minutes to take any remaining questions that you have.
Thank you. Once again, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star 1, and please record your name when prompted. One moment, please. We have a question from Lila Tuxbury. Your line is open. Please check the mute feature on your phone.
Actually, it's Daria Hart.
Okay, your line is open.
My question is, Ted, with these regional, you call them moderators, when they give us help and or instructions, will they fall under the law that if we get direction from the Secretary of State's office, it's presumed to be correct?
Please stand by for a moment. Right. Thank you. That's a good question. The bill, the law contemplates the persons being essentially an extension of this office. It's as if one of our elections officers or one of our attorneys were out in the field. So to that extent, and they would be consistently reporting to us and conferring with us. So it's our sense that, yes, they'd be acting on behalf of this office. And in fact, the law says they would. But we're going to work out exactly how that line of communication will work. And
okay, but just as a follow-up, our protection is when we get it in writing from you, not verbally. So I would hope that you would instruct them to give their directions and or decisions in writing so that it meets the letter of the law and protects the registrars. That's all. Thank you.
I think it's mutually beneficial to everyone to put those in writing.
Thank you. Next question comes from Helen Campbell.
My question is a question of authority.
on election day, the moderator, do they answer to the regional monitor or to the registrar?
Stand by just a moment.
Well, he's making it sound like there is no moderator.
Yeah, thanks for the question. I just wanted to confirm with my colleagues for a moment. First of all, it should be clear. I mean, there were different drafts of this legislation that folks might have seen. In the final law, it's referred to as a regional monitor, so they're not a regional moderator, and they don't have the role of a moderator. Again, they're kind of an embed of this office within each COG. So the moderator's role within the polling place, which is clearly defined by law and is very, very important, and they have the final word on many, many things, has not changed, and the moderator remains a key figure in each polling place.
Any other questions?
No, thank you. There was some confusion in our office about the role of the monitor.
Right. Well, we will take that. That's well taken, and in our communications, we'll try and make sure everything is quite clear.
Thank you.
Thank you, and I show no further questions at this time.
All right. On behalf of the office and Secretary Merrill, I want to thank everyone for participating and for your wide variety of questions. Please keep the line of communications between yourselves and this office open as we work as a team to implement this new vital legislation. And I'm sure there will be other calls and communications as time goes on. I'd also like to remind you that the call was recorded and will be available on our website as early as tomorrow. Thank you again. Look forward to seeing you soon.
Thank you. This concludes today's conference. You may disconnect at this time.